Picture this. It's dawn in September 1948 on a dry white lake bed in Utah called Bonneville. The salt stretches to the horizon in every direction, flat and blinding even before the sun has fully risen. A small crowd of mechanics and timing officials huddle near a black motorcycle, its engine already ticking with heat from a warm-up pass, and standing next to it is a man named Rolly Free, and he is about to do something that will become one of the most famous images in the history of motorsport. He strips off his leather jacket, he strips off his boots, he strips off almost everything, until he is standing on the salt in nothing but a bathing suit, a hairnet, and a pair of borrowed sneakers. Why would anyone do that in front of a crowd of strangers? Because every scrap of fabric flapping in the wind was costing him speed, and that morning, speed was the only thing that mattered. He lays flat across the back of the bike, stretched out like a man flying, chin tucked against the fuel tank, and the machine screams down the salt. When the timing lights finally clock him, the number reads 150.3 miles an hour. On a motorcycle in 1948, and the machine underneath him was not a Harley Davidson. It was not an Indian. It was not built anywhere in America at all. It was a Vincent, assembled by a small, almost obsessive company in a town called Stevenage, England. And on that morning, on American salt, in front of American timing officials, it did not just set a record, it humiliated an entire industry. Today we are talking about that machine, the Vincent Black Shadow, and the story of how a motorcycle built by a handful of British engineers in a factory smaller than most Harley-Davidson dealerships became the fastest production motorcycle on Earth. So fast that when Americans lined it up next to their beloved Harleys, the Harleys simply could not keep up. This is a story about obsession, about a founder who refused to compromise even when it nearly destroyed him, about a machine so far ahead of its time that people genuinely struggled to believe the numbers on paper, and about how being the best in the world is sometimes not enough to survive. Stick with me, because the ending of this story is not the one you expect. Let's get into it. To understand why the Black Shadow hit America like a thunderclap, you first have to understand what American riders were used to. In the late 1940s, Harley-Davidson was the undisputed king of American motorcycling. Big, heavy, low-revving V-twins, built for cruising down long, straight highways at a relaxed pace, dependable, comfortable, and dripping with the kind of chrome and heritage that made owning one feel like joining a brotherhood. Nobody was buying a Harley to chase a lap record. They were buying it for the sound, the presence, and the feeling of American iron between their legs. And for decades, that was enough, because nobody was seriously pushing them on outright performance. Indian was struggling and would fold by 1953. There was no real rival forcing Harley to build something faster. The company had no reason to chase raw speed, so it didn't. Then in 1946, a small British firm most Americans had never heard of released a motorcycle called the Vincent Series B Rapide, and 3 years later followed it with something even more dangerous, the Black Shadow. And the man behind it, Philip Vincent, was not interested in comfort or chrome or heritage marketing. Philip Vincent was obsessed with one single idea, that a motorcycle should be engineered like a piece of precision machinery, not assembled like a piece of furniture. He had taken over a small motorcycle maker called HRD in 1928, while he was still practically a university student, and he spent the next two decades chasing a singular, almost stubborn vision, build the best engineered motorcycle in the world, whatever the cost. And by 1948, he had done it. The Black Shadow used a 998 cubic centimeter V-twin engine, but calling it just a V-twin undersells what it actually was. This was a hand-built, high-compression, meticulously balanced engine that produced roughly 55 horsepower at a time when most production motorcycles anywhere in the world were lucky to hit 30. It weighed less than most of its American rivals. It used an advanced cantilever rear suspension, when many bikes still had none at all, and Vincent famously fitted it with a speedometer that read up to 150 miles an hour, because the factory genuinely expected riders to see triple digits on public roads. Let that sink in for a moment. In an era when most motorcycles struggled to comfortably hold 70 miles an hour, Vincent handed customers a bike that could, in the right hands, brush against 125, and told them plainly, on the dial in front of their eyes, that this was normal. It was not a boast, it was a specification. Word of this machine reached America the way rumors always did in that era, slowly at first, through returning servicemen, through import dealers, through the handful of magazines that covered motorcycling seriously. And then it stopped being a rumor. Journalists and racers who got their hands on a Black Shadow ran it against everything America had to offer, and the results were not close. A stock Harley-Davidson of the period, one of the big overhead valve twins that American riders considered the fastest thing on two wheels, would top out somewhere in the mid-90s on a good day with a skilled rider tucked flat. The Black Shadow, straight off the showroom floor with no special tuning, would leave it behind and keep pulling. This was not a case of two motorcycles being close, with one edging out the other. This was a British machine built in a factory that most Americans could not have found on a map, making the pride of American engineering look like it was standing still. But here is the part that most people get wrong when they tell this story. They assume the Black Shadow won because it was simply more powerful brute force against brute force. It was not that simple, and understanding why is what actually explains the legend. The Vincent's advantage was not just horsepower, it was philosophy. Philip Vincent designed the entire motorcycle as a single integrated system. The engine was actually a fully stressed member of the frame itself, meaning there was no separate frame cradling the engine the way almost every other manufacturer built bikes at the time. This made the whole machine lighter, stiffer, and far more precise through corners, which meant a skilled rider could actually use all that power instead of simply surviving it. The gearbox was built into the same casing as the engine to save weight. The brakes, twin drum units front and rear, were genuinely powerful enough to match the top speed, which was rare for the era, because most manufacturers built engines that outran their own brakes. Every decision on the Black Shadow was made in service of one single goal, going fast safely and repeatably, not just once on a good day, but every single time you twisted the throttle. And then there was the marketing, if you can even call it that. Vincent did not need slogans. The company put it on the dashboard. A Black Shadow speedometer calibrated to 150 miles an hour, sitting right in front of the rider every time they climbed on, was the loudest advertisement any motorcycle company could ever produce because it was daring you to prove it wrong, and racers tried again and again, and the bike kept delivering. Which brings us back to that morning on the Salt in 1948. Rolly Free was not riding a stock Black Shadow that day. He was on a specially tuned version called the Black Lightning, stripped of anything unnecessary, built purely to chase a number. But the engine underneath him, the fundamental architecture that made it possible, was pure Vincent DNA, the same DNA sitting in showroom Black Shadows across the country. When that photograph of Free lying flat on the bike in a bathing suit hit newspapers and magazines across America, it did something no advertisement ever could. It became folklore. People who had never even seen a Vincent in person knew the name. It became shorthand in American motorcycling circles for one simple, humbling idea. The fastest motorcycle in the world right now is not one of ours. For a company that small, that should have been the beginning of an American empire. Dealers wanted more units than Vincent could ever produce. Riders were willing to pay a premium, and in some cases wait months, just to get their hands on one. Every issue of the motorcycling press that covered the Black Shadow practically read like a challenge thrown at Milwaukee. So naturally, you would expect this story to end with Vincent becoming a household name, sitting comfortably alongside Harley-Davidson in the American imagination for decades to come. It didn't, and this is the part of the story that gets left out of almost every retelling, the part that actually makes it worth telling at all. Building the fastest motorcycle in the world by hand, with obsessive precision, one machine at a time, is not a business model. It is a very expensive hobby that happens to produce extraordinary motorcycles. Every Black Shadow that left the Stevenage factory was essentially a bespoke object. Components were hand-fitted, tolerances were checked and rechecked. Skilled workers who understood the intricacies of that engine were not easy to train quickly, and Philip Vincent refused again and again to cut corners just to increase output. The result was a motorcycle that cost significantly more to build than a comparable Harley-Davidson, while being produced in a tiny fraction of the volume. Vincent was quite literally losing the ability to compete on price even while it was crushing the competition on performance. Then came the years after the initial burst of fame, and the cracks that had always been there started to show. Post-war Britain was not an easy place to run a small precision manufacturer. Steel was rationed, skilled labor was expensive and hard to retain. Currency restrictions made exporting to America, the one market where Vincent's reputation was strongest, painfully complicated and expensive. Every motorcycle Vincent sold in the United States barely covered its own cost. Sometimes it didn't cover it at all. The company was, in a very real sense, bleeding money to maintain a reputation it could not financially sustain. And here is the cruel irony sitting at the center of this entire story. The very obsession with perfection that made the Black Shadow the fastest motorcycle in the world was the exact same obsession that made the company financially unsustainable. You cannot mass produce obsession. You cannot scale a factory built around one man's refusal to compromise. By 1955, it was over. Vincent ceased motorcycle production entirely, not because the engineering had failed, not because a rival had built something faster and made the Black Shadow obsolete on the road, because for years after production stopped, nothing else on sale anywhere in the world could reliably beat one in a straight line. Vincent did not lose to a better motorcycle. Vincent lost to arithmetic. The company simply could not build these machines fast enough or cheaply enough to survive as a business, while companies like Harley-Davidson, selling machines that were slower but dramatically simpler and cheaper to produce at scale, kept their factories running for generations. And that is the piece of this story. People almost never sit with long enough. We tend to tell motorcycle history as a simple story of winners and losers, whoever was fastest, whoever sold the most, whoever is still around today. But the Vincent Black Shadow forces you to separate two things that we usually assume travel together, being the best and surviving. For a few extraordinary years, a tiny British company with a stubborn founder built, by a significant margin, the finest performing motorcycle on the planet, faster than anything Harley-Davidson, anything Indian, anything from Germany or Italy could put on the road. And it still lost the business war, not because the machine was flawed, but because brilliance built by hand does not scale, and the market does not wait for perfection, it waits for whatever it can actually buy. So what happened to the Black Shadow after 1955? This is where the story quietly turns from tragedy into something closer to immortality. Because unlike so many small manufacturers that simply vanish from memory once the factory doors close, the Vincent Black Shadow never actually went away. It became something bigger than a motorcycle. It became a symbol. Decades later, American writers and journalists who grew up hearing about that Bonneville run kept the legend alive in print, describing the Black Shadow in almost mythical terms, a machine so intense that riding one properly felt less like operating a vehicle and more like negotiating with something barely under control. That reputation only grew with time instead of fading, which is the exact opposite of what usually happens to motorcycles from failed companies. Today, an original Vincent Black Shadow in good condition is one of the most valuable production motorcycles in the world, regularly selling at auction for sums that would have seemed absurd to the mechanics who hand-built them in Stevenage. Collectors do not chase these bikes because they are rare relics of a company that failed. They chase them because riding one, even today on modern roads, against modern machines, still reveals just how startlingly advanced that engineering genuinely was. The stressed engine frame concept that Philip Vincent pioneered because he refused to waste a single unnecessary pound of weight became a foundational idea that motorcycle and even race car designers would return to again and again over the following decades. The obsession with brakes matching top speed, the obsession with the engine and gearbox forming one precise unit, ideas that seemed almost excessive in 1948 became simply how serious performance motorcycles are engineered today. And Harley-Davidson, the company that machine humiliated on that salt flat back in 1948, is of course still here, bigger and more profitable than Vincent ever managed to be, even at its absolute peak. That is not a contradiction. It is actually the entire point of this story. Harley-Davidson survived because it built a business, a brand, a philosophy of comfort and cruising and identity that generations of American riders wanted to buy into, year after year, decade after decade. Vincent built the single fastest, most precisely engineered motorcycle the world had ever seen, and could not build a business around it fast enough to keep the doors open. Two completely different definitions of winning, and history uncomfortably allowed both of them to be true at the same time. So what do we actually take from a story like this? It would be easy to walk away thinking this is simply a tale of a small underdog company that beat a giant and then faded away. But that is too simple, and it misses what actually makes this story worth telling in the first place. The Vincent Black Shadow is proof that being objectively, verifiably the best in the world is not a guarantee of anything, not survival, not fame that lasts through your own lifetime, not even a fair fight in the marketplace. And yet, 70-plus years later, we are still talking about a man in a bathing suit lying flat across a British motorcycle on an American salt flat, going faster than anything Harley-Davidson had ever built, faster than most people even believed was possible on two wheels in 1948. Every Harley-Davidson built that same year has long since been forgotten by name, but the Black Shadow, the machine, the record, the photograph, all of it is burned into motorcycling history forever. Some machines win the race, some machines win the memory, and every so often, if the engineering is good enough and the story is strange enough, a small factory in Stevenage, England builds something that manages to win both, even if it takes the rest of the world 70 years to fully admit it. If you have ever seen a Vincent in person, if you know someone who owns one, or if this story surprised you the way it surprised me when I first found it, tell me down in the comments. Stories like this one deserve to be remembered properly. And if you want more of these forgotten chapters of motorcycle history brought back to life, you already know exactly what to do next.